Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Pod and the Pendulum, the horror movie podcast that covers all of the franchises, one movie and one episode at a time. I'm your host, Mike Snoonian, and I'm joined again in the co-host chair by the author of the upcoming book, Millennial Nasties, Horror Movies and Torture Porn in the 2000s, Miss Hellraiser herself, Miss Ariel Powers-Job. Ariel, how are we?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here. We've made it through another franchise.
We are at the end. Yeah. This is very exciting. It's always cool to be at the end. And I'm going to check one thing out here because it looks like, are my levels a little bit high? Am I super loud right now?
Not to me, but I see that the line is really intense on yours, but I hear you fine.
Okay, I'm going to take that down just a hair. There we go. All right. But we'll just keep going there. Ari, quick question. Does your name Ari Hellraiser come from the Hellraiser movies or the fact that you're out there doing crime in your spare time? Which is it?
It's just because my name is Ariel, which rhymes with hell, and it's not very much more creative than that.
Damn it. All right. Well,
can I say I'm doing crimes? That's kind of fun.
But you're not really.
No, I'm not.
But you're not.
I'm pretty much a rule follower.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah. The name Ari Hellraiser is kind of a lie.
Well, that in itself is kind of rule breaking.
That's you're true. Lying. It's kind
there
of
you
ironic.
Go. All right. Mm-hmm. It fits. So let's talk next of kin.
Yes.
Let's dive right into this kind of reboot, reset ending point.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's going to be, at least for the time being, an ending point for Paranormal Activity. Let's get our initial thoughts. And I think we're going to diverge on this one here. I think we were pretty much in sync when it came to Ghost Dimension.
Yeah.
On we were pretty much like on the same page, but we might go to war a little bit on this one.
I don't think we'll go to war.
But the show might end.
Oh, no.
The laptops might be slammed.
Microphones tossed.
Yes, just might be one of those days. I don't think this will be the movie that I will get that strong of feelings about.
No, same.
But what are your initial impressions or thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so there is a lot that I like about it, but I wanted to like it more than I did. Mm-hmm. I only watched it last week for the first time for the show. I hadn't ever just gotten around to it yet. And like, I think it's on Paramount Plus. Like, I don't have Paramount Plus and I don't have a copy of it. So I just never really went out of my way to watch it. I do like the sort of like taking it to a different direction. I like the characters. I like the modern setting. Approaching it as a documentary makes a ton of sense. I feel like someone who makes documentaries for a living might make a documentary about them meeting their birth family. So a lot of the setup, I think, is really, really good. And where it falls apart for me is just in the execution, which we'll get to.
Mm-hmm.
So not a favorite of mine, but also not at the bottom of the pile.
No. Okay. So for me, I enjoyed this one quite a bit, especially on the initial couple watches. Rewatching it again today, I can see, like, especially maybe watching it so closely after watching it the other night, getting ready for the podcast, I'm like, okay, like I can definitely see a bit more of the flaws of it. I think I appreciate that this one was a fresh start for the franchise.
Yeah.
Especially after coming off of like 6 weeks of one storyline and that storyline feeling like it only had about three movies worth of material.
Exactly.
In it.
Yeah.
I felt like I really liked these characters a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I like that there's a new mystery to kind of wrap the head around. I actually like that it plays fast and loose with the idea of found footage. I'm not necessarily a found footage purist in that it really breaks the rules of found footage films.
And it does, yeah.
I'll talk about what my take on that here shortly. I would much rather have a movie that cheats, and this movie does cheat pretty brazenly in terms of what a found footage movie is, rather than what I was doing when it came to like part four in Ghost Dimension, where like every few minutes it felt like I was pausing the movie going, there's how much left in this movie?
Yeah, at least you're entertained.
Yeah. And those last 15 minutes are genuinely crazy. Like, they're just like, what if we completely fly off the handle mm-hmm. with this and just do some really weird shit?
But at that point, I'm like, just don't make it found footage then.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
You know, like.
Of course.
I hate to be negative. And like, I actually really do like found footage. I haven't sounded like a found footage fan during this coverage of this franchise, but I really am. And I'm just kind of like.
It might be because they're not necessarily good found footage movies.
Yeah. I'm like, if you're going to make a found footage movie, try to stick to the script. If you're mm-hmm. not going to be able to do that, don't make a found footage movie. Easy for me to say, mm-hmm. right? I'm not a filmmaker. But yeah, this movie really stretches what's realistic about found footage, especially one particular moment, which we'll get to.
This would have been a good episode for me to ask Mary Beth to come back on mm-hmm. because she's our found footage guru.
Yeah.
And I think she actually likes this movie. I think she mentioned in passing she likes it. And stupid me... I'm not always the best about remembering to reach out to potential guests. So sorry about that, because I think she can maybe even talk about like where this breaks the rules and why that might not be a bad thing. I think I actually know that I saw this like the weekend it came out, because it came out like Halloween weekend in 2021. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I want to say it was this and The Medium, which debuted on Shudder.
Yeah.
Like I did like a Halloween double feature. And The Medium is a much better movie.
The Medium's great.
Yeah, The Medium is fantastic. If you want like a great found footage movie, one that is like scary as hell, I am pretty sure that that is the movie that I watched in tandem with Next of Kin while like giving out Halloween candy that year. I think I'm like, I'll make this my double feature. And I really enjoyed it. And we'll talk about why in a little bit here. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, let's talk not a ton of background on this movie. This is kind of this and Ghost Dimension are really kind of like the forgotten movies in this franchise. Like they're kind of the Cousin Olivers of the series.
So like we talked about last week, Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension was promoted as the final installment. But in June 2019, Paramount announced that a seventh installment and a standalone sequel was in development. This was announced in the quote-unquote before times. You know, we all kind of have a before lockdown and after lockdown now. So there were no plot details at that point, just sort of seventh installment is coming, strap in.
Yep, just like if you're a fan of the series, new movie's coming, that's it. And that's all they told us.
So by November of that same year, a release date of March 19th, 2021 was announced, pitting it against Tomb Raider 2, which I don't remember at all. If that
I don't
is a
even
thing.
Remember the first.
Yeah, like I haven't
Tomb
seen them.
Raider.
I don't remember thinking about them.
And they're hits. Like,
are
they're not unsuccessful movies.
Okay, cool. Good for them.
Good for you, Tomb
Raider. Yeah, good job, Tomb Raider. Outlets would
you keep tooming. Still Tomb Raider 3, still tooming.
Electric Boogaloo.
Or still raiding, I guess.
Yes. Okay. So outlets would talk about the near $1 billion the franchise had made worldwide. That is Paranormal Activity, not Tomb Raider. While also quickly pointing out how the past few entries had brought in lower returns.
Yeah, that was something I found like in doing research for this, like every article that was talking about the new movie coming out would talk about like how it had made about 900, like as a whole, like the six movies had pulled in over $900 million, mm-hmm. how they cost less than like $30 million to produce. But you know, part the marked ones in Ghost Dimension, you know, we're seeing like significantly smaller returns, like Ghost Dimension in particular. Mm-hmm. They talked about how like domestically it didn't make like twice its budget back, and how it was like making significantly less than the previous movies. Like outlets are actually pointing out like, hey, this series is probably on its last legs.
Yeah. And then COVID happened.
What?
Yeah.
What was that?
I can barely remember. It didn't change my life drastically. So COVID obviously pushed, my goodness, COVID obviously pushed everything back, and a director wasn't announced until February of 2021. William Eubank, who had directed Kristen Stewart in Underwater, would direct a script from longtime Paranormal Activity stalwart Christopher Landon. We got him back. It was confirmed to be a reboot rather than a continuation of the previous films.
Yeah. Have you seen Underwater?
No, I really want to. It's one of those I just haven't gotten to yet.
It's great. It was the last movie I saw in theaters before.
Yeah.
Everything shut down in 2020. Do you know the twist of it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Or the big spoiler at the end of it?
I don't think so.
I don't know if I should reveal it or not for like a four-year-old movie.
I mean, I want to watch it, so
okay.
If you think it'll ruin it for me, then don't.
I don't think it'll ruin
okay.
it. Okay. It's basically, it's Cthulhu.
Okay, that like, I did know.
The end of the movie, it's like, is that? And you're like, that's fucking Cthulhu.
Yeah.
And Eubank was like, yep, that's Cthulhu.
Awesome.
More people should see Underwater. Like, Kristen Stewart's awesome in it. It's a great action horror piece. You know, it ties into like the Lovecraftian mythos mm-hmm. in a pretty fun way. It was pretty fantastic. It was especially a blast to see like in the theaters as well. So like it's a, you know, Eubank definitely has some chops.
Yeah, I do want to see it. It was on my list. So we put up a Halloween tree every year and leave it up mm-hmm. through Christmas. It's an upside down black tree with purple lights. It's very fun.
Okay.
I have a Cthulhu ornament that I did put up. And I also have like a cocktail spoon, you know, like a long cocktail spoon that has Cthulhu on the end of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Just kind of
fun. Very cool.
Yeah. I like Cthulhu imagery.
What is an upside down tree?
So it's a fake tree. So that helps. And it is designed to like the it's like a Christmas tree shape. So the pointy part is on the bottom attached to the base.
Okay.
And then it sort of winds at the top. Kind of looks like a tornado.
Got it.
And I did think about getting a bunch of shark ornaments and making a Sharknado tree. Mm-hmm. But then we watched Sharknado and did commentary on it. And I probably am not going to do that.
You're like, this movie is so terrible.
Dude, it was. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
You could do a Jaws-themed tree.
I could, but then it's like the Sharknado thing doesn't.
What if you remake Jaws, but then there's a tornado during the remake?
Oh, I mean, Jaws-nado? That's got to be a thing.
Yeah.
We can workshop that.
It would be better. Spielberg, get on it.
Yeah. Okay. So, and listeners, if you haven't listened to our Jaws series from last summer, go back and listen to that. It was really fun.
It's really fun.
So a quote from Christopher Landon to Screen Rant about the production note. Someone at the studio presented us with a chart, and it was like, these are the acceptable things that you can do, and these are the things you can't do. They were designated in a specific order, and at the very top was, you can't kill a dog, and then under that was a baby, and 10 down was a cat. Our priorities as a society are very fucked up because dog is above baby. But I also understand that. I'm a dog lover.
What do you think of that? What are our thoughts?
What a silly quote. It's just like, okay, I'm trying to get my thoughts together.
Cats, my thing that jumps out is cats getting the short end of the shrift right there. Like cats are, what is between baby and cats?
That was my wonder too. You know, it's the website is doesthedogdie.com, not doesthecatdie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just hard. I mean, I'm also a dog person, so it's just harder to watch on screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting to me that they would give him this note for this movie because, like, none of the Paranormal Activity movies have hurt a cat or a dog or a baby, really. I mean, the kidnapping. Right. Children, but
like Abby the dog gets hurt, but it survives.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like, why is this note necessary?
Maybe Christopher Landon came in hot with his pitch and he was like, this is the Paranormal Activity where the demon just kills dogs like indiscriminately. Like the inciting, you know, we know what's hot right now is like John Wick. Mm. And what we're going to do is we're going to have the movie start like John Wick style, where Katie's going to come in and just like rip the throat out of like 30 dogs. Goodness. And it's going to be super graphic and on screen. And then the next thing she's going to do is take two babies and smash them together like she's Stone Cold Steve Austin smashing Pierce.
That's the exact image I had in my head, was the Steve Weisers.
Yeah. Then Katie's going to scream, "Oh, hell yeah. It's Paranormal Activity time. Katie 316 says it's Paranormal Activity." And then smash cut, Paranormal Activity, Next of Kin, night two. And Paramount said, "Okay, we need to come up with a list of things you're not allowed to do, Christopher."
Number one.
Maybe that's why there's a list.
No more cocaine.
Yes.
That's really funny. I'm hearing the breaking glass in my head.
That would be amazing.
Yes. The idea of smacking two babies together and very good. Very, very good.
Someone needs to do that now. Someone needs to like make that movie.
Not with real babies, listeners. No, Mike, we're going to get put on a list.
What list?
I don't know, but I don't want to be on
awesome
it.
Some idea, people?
Maybe.
All right.
Okay.
To the next note here. So anyway, I do want to know what was 3 through 9.
We'll never know.
Cats really do get like the short end of the stick there. So Paramount, like after this, announced shortly afterwards their film was not going to go to theaters, but Next of Kin would debut on their streaming platform, Paramount Plus, as part of a push to entice subscribers with original content. And that would come out in between a pair of other horror movies, one of them being called The In-Between and other being a prequel to the Pet Sematary remake, Pet Sematary Bloodlines, which just came out last year, actually.
I haven't seen either of those, and I don't think I remember hearing about The In-Between.
Me neither.
Okay.
I like read a synopsis of it and I'm like, meh. Bloodlines is not good.
That's what I've heard.
It's not good. Not only is it completely unnecessary, but it's like shot in a way where you can't really see what's going on.
Oh.
Like it's just way too dark. So, I mean, it's a weird complaint. It's like that old complaint, like the food at this restaurant is terrible and the portions are way too small, but it's just, it's not a good movie.
Okay.
And this kind of continues what we talked about last time with Ghost Dimension, where Ghost Dimension didn't go quite direct to streaming, but it went to video on demand like very, very quickly. Like it was before the times when Paramount and Universal and HBO Warner Brothers and Disney all had their own streaming platforms.
Right.
Now all of these companies do, and all of them are obsessed with basically getting their own content and being their own, kind of like their own delivery service and their own factory farms and creating their own content, thinking, hey, we're going to just skip theatrical completely. We'll keep all the profit. If we put enough content out on these services, people will subscribe to us indefinitely. And we'll get that $9.99, $11.99, or however much it is every month indefinitely if we just keep putting stuff out there. And I think it's really hurt. Like, I think we're finding a couple years after streamers have tried to do this, it's not really successful.
Right, because people don't want to pay. It's like back when you had to pick cable packages with certain channels and you didn't want to pay for the channels you weren't going to watch. Like, people don't want to pay $11.99 for, you know, 10 different streaming services every month. You might pick and choose and take your free trials and can't, you know, put it on for 2 months and then cancel it so you can watch a show if you're really organized. But like, a lot of people just sort of opt out of the whole thing because it's kind of a pain to keep track of.
Exactly. Netflix is the one people have just because, like, it was the first.
Yeah, it's kind of the foundation.
The big one.
Yeah.
Right? Prime is the one that people have just because so many people have Amazon Prime. It kind of comes with it.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody subscribes to Amazon Prime for their content. I think they just see it as a freebie.
Yes.
It gets tossed in.
I'm really mad, though, because they put ads in. And I'm like, yeah. What are we paying for? I'm like really legit mad about that.
I canceled my Prime subscription because of that.
Okay.
And then realized my wife had a separate one, which I didn't realize.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, oh, I can just piggyback off of yours. Yeah. I didn't realize we could share it. So I don't mind it if it's at the beginning of a movie or a show. Like if you want to show me like 2 minutes of ads before a movie, I can just as easily like hit play, go throw a bag of popcorn in, you know, like load the dishwasher and then come back. Right. Like I don't mind that. But like in when you're watching a movie and have that interrupted, you know, like at some random point during the movie, like makes no sense. I fucking hate that.
And I accept it from Tubi. Because Tubi's free.
It's a free service.
And Tubi has a ton of stuff you can't find anywhere else. So I'm like, Tubi, I will watch your ads or I will go get another Diet Coke during your ads.
Yeah.
But Amazon Prime.
And you know that up front.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had HBO Max or just Max now because why would you want the HBO brand name, which has been synonymous for quality for like four decades? Why would you want that?
Yeah, it's very silly.
We had that as part of like our AT&T phone service for a year. And then I switched to T-Mobile to get on my wife's plan. But AT&T never changed it for about 10 months.
Ooh.
So for a year, we were getting it for free. Or 10 months, we were getting it for free until like literally last week.
Dang
it. And I went to watch another episode of Curb. And it's like, you no longer have this.
Aww,
and I'm now debating, like, do we actually pay the $20 a month? And I'm like, I'll see how long I can go without it.
Right.
I don't want to pay for like all these services. But I think the other thing is that it devalues the actual content.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? Like this doesn't feel like a real movie. Pet Sematary Bloodlines doesn't feel like a real movie because like they start like right on the streaming service themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to say like, hey, Next of Kin is going to play in theaters and then 90 days after that, it's going to play exclusively on Paramount Plus. Like that's the only place you're going to be able to stream it unless you like pay $6 to rent it or $20 to buy it somewhere.
Yeah.
We're not going to be on Netflix or HBO or Peacock. That is the way to go, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't want to get Paramount Plus because I just don't want to pay for another channel, but at least it makes sense.
Yeah. The one that I pay for is Peacock. I think they have enough good stuff on there between the movies, the TV shows, the WWE content, and some live sports. Like, that's the one where I'm like, all right, I'll watch Parks and Rec twice a year.
Yeah.
So that's worth it. And Peacock was doing the thing where, like, we'll put a movie in theaters, but the same day put it on our streaming service.
Yes.
Like, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
During COVID, I got it.
Yes.
But now, like, doesn't make any sense.
Yes. During COVID, it was like a wonderful thing for accessibility and maintaining our sanity. When, you know, when we're not in lockdowns, it doesn't make as much sense.
No. Look at Pixar. Pixar at one point was probably like the most valuable and valued brand name. And like movies, like you knew if you put Pixar in front of it, it was going to be super high quality. It was going to be super entertaining. Families were going to like, kids would love it. Adults would love it. Like I could bring Ada to the movie, like with the exception of like The Good Dinosaur and maybe the Cars sequels. Like I was going to walk out of there being like, I saw a pretty damn good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to make a shit ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then they like, we're going to put everything on Disney Plus first and we're going to bypass the theaters. And all of a sudden, like, Pixar's like not making any money. And when they put things in theaters, like, they're not making anything like they used to. And it feels like that brand is not nearly what it once was. And it should be pretty interesting. Like, I hope Inside Out 2 is fantastic. It looks really fun. And I hope they get back on track.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because the original is so good.
Yeah. You know, and like the movies they put out, like Soul was really good. Coco was really good.
I loved Soul.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
But people like didn't want to go Red. I think it was Red Panda Pixar or just Disney. I want to say it was Pixar, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. I also want to say it was Pixar, but I also get this wrong a lot. Red Panda was awesome, though. Or
yeah.
Turning Red. Is that what it was?
Turning Red.
Yeah.
Yes.
That movie was incredible.
Like the movies didn't get any worse. Like the movies didn't go down in quality.
That's true.
But because they were seen as like, oh, this is just like content for the streaming gristle, they weren't seen as valuable or as valued as they once were. And I think that's what happens when you're just like creating content for the streamer. And now like you're going back to the old days where like HBO was like, here's a bunch of our shows, Netflix. Like instead of putting it on our streamer, we're going to like just take money from you and you can put it on your service as well. So we're kind of back to what it's already always was to begin with.
Yes.
Yay.
Yay. Content. Consuming content.
Right. So speaking of content, what does Jason Blum have to say about all this, Ari?
Oh, something probably really, really insightful.
Mm-hmm.
In an interview with Collider, Jason Blum said, "Paramount wanted to continue Paranormal Activity. I probably would have left it alone. So they wanted to continue it, but I thought if they were going to continue it, it was tired. There was no way to continue the road we'd been down. So I really encouraged all the creative people involved to think of something new.
Smashing babies together.
For example.
Killing dogs.
A lot of people who are going to go see the new Paranormal Activity were 3 years old when the first Paranormal Activity came out. First of all, rude. So they don't even know from those older movies. I thought if you were going to redo it, you better really redo it, not try to expand what we did all those years ago." So once again, Jason Blum sort of takes a sideways backdoor approach into making a good point, but he does it by taking the most asshole route possible.
Yeah.
He like insults everybody on the way and ends up at a good point. You're like, God damn it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's not wrong. And by this point, Blumhouse was kind of like past this kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like this was the kind of movie that built, like just like with New Line Cinema, New Line, like Bob Shea was always like A Nightmare on Elm Street, like Freddy Krueger is what built New Line Cinema. Yeah. And he was always grateful for that and always protective. And like low budget horror is always what built Blumhouse. But by this time, like they're getting Oscar nominations for things like Whiplash, for Get Out. Like he has Oscars now. He's doing like slightly bigger movies. They're not really making these like micro budget, not big picture movies anymore. But now like they're getting David Gordon Green and they're doing the Halloween sequels and they're not making like $100 million on a movie, but they're making like hundreds of millions of dollars on the Halloween sequels, on Get Out, on movies like that. So his sights are set like much larger than something like this. So he's kind of leaving it in the rearview mirror.
Yep. Yep.
And there just there's no nostalgia in this guy's.
No, and it's like Paranormal Activity was the foundation for Blumhouse. Like, show a little love to the franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
No budget.
Yeah, that was weird. I can't find this film's budget anywhere.
No.
Okay, so it's not just me and my terrible Googling skills.
Nope. Couldn't find it on Box Office Mojo, couldn't find it on some other like box office areas. And maybe because it went direct to streaming, they're not really putting it out there. So, but I can't imagine that it's more than like the Ghost Dimension. I can't imagine they spent more than like $5 to $10 million on this.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought it was weird that I couldn't find it, but. Yeah. Okay.
Although it does have a slightly, I guess, bigger cast than most of the PA movies. And it does, I wonder, like, there's not a lot of behind the scenes things like, did they build these sets?
Right.
You know, things of that nature.
And there's some CGI, like,
a little bit.
So I do wonder, but I was like, I cannot find this. Mm-hmm. So it debuted on October 29th, 2021, along with the making of documentary for all of the Paranormal Activity movies on Paramount Plus, which I haven't seen.
It's okay.
Okay.
It's like a 90-minute documentary, and it gives a little bit more time to the first movie, but then it like kind of equal amount of time to the rest of them. Mm. And it's not a super in-depth behind the scenes look really at any of them.
Okay.
You could honestly, not to humble brag, but I think especially with our first few episodes, like we put a lot more information into like the behind the scenes, like how did this get made, than like the documentary actually does.
Got it. So we did do a lot of research. So
we do. This was a nice little, because that's one of my complaints about like the Blu-rays is like, mm-hmm. there is not a lot on there.
Yeah.
And it's especially weird because, or especially for the first movie, like Oren Peli is someone we talked about in that first movie who like learned filmmaking by basically going through the supplemental materials of movies. And you think like that was when physical media was at its height. Mm-hmm. You think you would like stuff this thing to the gills.
Yeah.
And it just might be there wasn't a lot because they might have just like cut that thing to the bone. But like there's like no commentaries. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like that at all. I mean, how much would it have cost to get like Katie and Mika to do like a commentary for the movie where you could have like Mika verbally assaults Katie like he does in the movie for night. They could do it in character.
Yeah.
And he could just be a complete creep. You know?
Could probably get him back for that.
Do it for a couple like Sizzler coupons.
Does the Sizzler still exist?
Somewhere it must. Let's find out.
Are we good?
Let's do a quick internet research while you do the next
one. Okay. So while we're checking on the wellness of Sizzler, let's talk about the critical response. So the Rotten Tomatoes consensus reads, Paranormal Activity Next of Kin gives the long-running found footage franchise a new level of visual polish. Unfortunately, effective scares are few and far between. And on Metacritic, the film has a score of 37 out of 100, based on reviews from 13 critics, indicating generally unfavorable reviews. Most said they were happy to see the series go in a new direction, but the scares were too few. Yeah, I mean, the thing I liked about it was the going in a new direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, to answer your question, it looks like California, there are a number of locations.
Okay.
We're looking at Lake Forest, Moreno Valley, West Valley City. It looks like there are also some in Utah and Idaho.
Okay.
So nothing east of the Mississippi River. It looks like it's all, there's a bunch in Idaho and Utah. There are a fair amount of, I can't get a feel for how many total locations of the Sizzler are left, but it looks like there's at least about 30 or 40.
They're alive and well out west.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good to know. I was concerned for a minute. Good to know that there are still Sizzlers around.
It is a comforting thought.
It is a comforting thought. Okay. But yes, critics did not like this.
Yeah. Movie. Yes. So another quote from Christopher Landon to IndieWire about being done with the franchise. We made one during COVID, and it was one of those things that just kind of happened. And I had no intention of even really being involved because I was like, oh, I'm done with that franchise. I really don't want to do it, he said. And then I had this whole weirdo idea about a fake Amish community, and we ended up making the movie. I mean, it's a franchise. They're always going to make another one. I don't see how they don't. I just don't know what they're planning, and I highly doubt I'll be involved anymore. Well, probably
super
not after that.
Yeah. Super enthusiastic.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I had a weird idea. We just kind of did it. Like, that's how movies get made.
Yeah. Like, Hollywood, where dreams come true.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're him, you got to feel a little burned. Like, you
for
did
sure.
Happy Death Day 1 and 2. The first one is wildly successful. Second one, although not as successful as the first, still pretty successful, turns a healthy profit. Mm-hmm. And you know you have like a great idea for the third movie, and that's going to cap the series. And I got to, if you're Christopher Landon and you, let's face it, you've made Jason Blum a very rich man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
You through your efforts with, because it's through his, whether or not I like the direction this series went in with part two and beyond, a lot of people do, and a lot of people paid to go see these movies.
Absolutely.
They made like a lot of money, and they really helped launch Blumhouse. Mm-hmm. If you're Christopher Landon, what do you need to make Happy Death Day 3? Like $5 million, $10 million? That is like pocket change from like what this series has made.
They need to
give
it to
Halloween movies have made, right? And meanwhile, you're looking at, I can't think of the guy that just directed Imaginary and Fantasy Island. I can't think of his name, but it just seems like the guy that keeps failing upwards. Mm-hmm. Like none of his movies seem to be very good. No one seems to really like them very much. And he keeps getting these projects.
Yeah. Interesting. Right?
Like, is anyone out there crying out for like Imaginary 2?
Not that I've heard.
No.
Happy Death Day 3, however.
Right. If you're Landon, you're probably like, I'm done. I just don't want to do this anymore. Yeah. And then you get handed Scream 7 and you're like, fuck yeah, Scream 7. Like, this is going to make a shit ton of money. And everyone's, I got, you know, Melissa Barrera. I've got Jenna Ortega at the height of her powers. Like, the last one made a shit ton of money. Like, this is going to be great. It's going to launch me to a whole new stratosphere. And then that movie just implodes like a dying star.
Yeah.
Right? And he's like, and he gets blamed for a lot of it for not doing anything.
He got blamed like, for remember, a lot of it?
Blamed is too strong a word. When Melissa Barrera was getting unfairly removed from the project for speaking out against the genocide of the Palestinians when she was making just pretty valid points on her social media and then getting unfairly removed. He didn't like say anything like really in her defense. He just kind of kept his head down and was doing the work behind the scenes. And a lot of people would unfairly come at him online.
I see.
And he's like, can you just leave me alone? Like, there's really not much I can say. Mm-hmm. And it just became hellish for him, it sounds like. You know, he's like, you don't really know the whole story of what I'm trying to do here. And then he quickly, I think soon thereafter, left the project. And it just sounds like what went from being a dream project to like a really hellish experience pretty quickly for him.
Yeah.
And really unfortunate.
Yeah.
Which is too bad.
It is.
I don't know if I love all of his projects, but he's got a pretty creative mind. He at least comes up with some pretty fun ideas. I think deep down, he just wants to make Back to the Future over and over again.
Yeah.
But, you know, he seems okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully we'll see a lot more from him. So back to Mr. Blum. He didn't mince words on his feelings about Next of Kin. Speaking to Variety at the Locarno Film Festival in August of 2022, he said, "It has been enough already. The last Paranormal Activity was terrible. With Halloween, we only had the rights to three movies, so we said, Halloween ends. It ends for Blumhouse, at least. With other things, you just have a feeling it's time to put them to bed. It would come back if some director I love, like Scott Derrickson, said, I have a great idea for a Paranormal Activity movie, but it's not something I want to do at the moment." Dude, don't call your own movies terrible.
Yeah.
You absolute brat.
Yeah. Right in the press. I mean, if you're William Eubank, why would you want to go work for this guy again? Right?
Right. Well, and
if you're Christopher Landon, why would you want to go work for this guy again?
It wouldn't make anybody want to go work for him because, like, what if he calls my movie terrible?
Yeah.
Like, dude, you put your money up, so take some responsibility.
And this is where I feel like if this movie, if it costs $5 million to make and it went out in theaters and made $50 million, mm-hmm. and Jason Blum gets his cut from that, and gets to put that in his pocket, he's not saying this.
Yeah, that's probably right? true.
Because this is a guy that's like driven by, like, Blumhouse is a very bottom line driven, and they have like a formula, and good for them. Like, I'm not even saying that like it's a negative thing.
Right.
It's like they run their studio like a business, and they've given a lot of persons, like, to their credit, they've given a lot of filmmakers a lot of autonomy.
Yep.
And they've said, like, you can do whatever you want creatively. We're going to completely stay out of your way. You want to kill babies on screen? Go ahead. You want to kill some dogs? Go ahead. Cats? Oh, we don't even give a fuck about cats. They're not even in our top 100. Like, this is all, like, that list, that's a Paramount thing. We don't give a shit whatsoever. But you can do whatever you want, but, like, this is our budget, this is the expectation, and it has to do at least this well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you remove that on a project like this, he no longer really cares about it, and he feels like maybe emboldened to say stuff like this.
Yeah.
And he, so
it clearly it doesn't hurt him at all. Like,
no.
Yeah.
No. I mean, we've seen clips of him in interviews, like, with like horror journalists that we really like and respect. And we see those clips and it looks like he doesn't want to be there.
Absolutely.
At all. And it's just like, come on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So thanks. Thanks, Jason Blum.
And it just feels like Blumhouse now, their focus is on things like, look, I'm older. And not everything is going to be made for me. And that is totally 100% fine.
Yes.
Totally cool.
Of course.
But it feels like the whole focus of that studio is on things like Five Nights at Freddy's and a much younger crowd. And I'm just, not all about that.
Did you see Torn Hearts a couple years ago?
Did not.
It's really good. Directed by Bria Grant. And it's
wait a minute.
Yeah.
Keep going. I'm sorry. Keep going.
It's a Blumhouse movie, and it's got, oh gosh, a super famous actress.
I did see this. This is awesome.
Yeah.
With Katie Sagal.
Yes. Yes. I absolutely love this. I feel like it flew under the radar as like a good Blumhouse movie. And Bria Grant kicks ass.
Because it was like straight to Hulu, wasn't it?
I think so. I watched it on a screener for Ghouls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this wasn't a theatrical movie.
No.
This was one of like the streaming movies they do. Yeah, Torn Hearts was great.
Yeah. So everybody go watch Torn Hearts because Bria Grant fucking rules.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got us way off track there.
No, you didn't. You did not.
So
I did there by trashing Jason Blumhouse.
I mean, listen, Jason it's what Blum. We do.
Whose house?
Blumhouse.
Okay, edit that part out.
No, keep it. Leave it in.
Let's talk this
Let's
movie.
Do it. Listen, the found footage, we've already kind of touched on the found footage bit of this is a stretch.
Okay, I'm going to blow your mind.
Okay, I'm ready.
This is not a found footage movie.
Okay.
This is a movie about people making a movie. It's not meant to be a found footage movie. It is just a regular film about people like making a documentary. And that's why it breaks the boundaries of found footage so often, because it's not really meant to be a found footage movie. It is just a regular old ass movie about people that are filming a documentary. And you get a lot of it from that perspective. Of like, it looks like a found footage movie for so much of it. But I think that is why you get like the different camera angles and breaking the shot and like, there's no way a camera can be here and the score and the stingers and the jump scares, because like, this isn't necessarily meant to be a found footage movie.
Okay.
We're just so used to this series being found footage, they were automatically assuming that it is.
Yeah.
It's not. It's about people making a movie. That was the conclusion I came to this morning.
Mike, you have officially blown my mind, as promised. And I really like that. I really like that. I will accept that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because otherwise, I'm just mad.
Okay. So that being said, let's still put this to the test.
Yeah. Okay. Why are we filming? Plausible. She's a documentary filmmaker by trade, and she was adopted. She's never met her birth family. she gets a chance to go meet some folks related by blood. So she's going to make a documentary about it. Fully plausible.
Yeah. It's also a point in time where people just film themselves all the time.
Absolutely. Now. Yep.
That is just a thing that we do. Yep. It's like if you don't film it, it doesn't seem like it actually happened.
Yep. And so I don't love it, but it also makes sense that they have a zillion cameras because, mm-hmm. of course, they do. They've got GoPros and drones and different types of cameras, and they have their phones. So now that I'm accepting this, this is a movie about making a documentary, I'm like, okay, I accept this. Because a lot of times in found footage, when they have so many different cameras, I'm like, you didn't find all of those. Like, I'd love to see a found footage movie where it seems like one of the cameras was just lost and there's a bunch mm-hmm. of holes in the narrative. I think that would be great to see. Maybe that exists. So, you know, if someone out there has a recommendation, let me know.
What if it was the last act or all the crazy shit happens and it just ends like right before the good stuff?
I mean, that would be plausible. It could pass the test. Mm-hmm. They drop the camera when they should drop the camera and the movie ends.
If just start running, yeah. The movie ends.
And so, like, the why are you still filming also works because it doesn't get dangerous until really mm-hmm. close to the end of the movie. Like,
yep.
Whereas the other movies, it gets dangerous a little earlier, I think. Mm-hmm. So they're like, creepy, weird stuff is happening, but our purpose is to document it. And they all have like several cameras in their pockets at any time anyway. So like, totally plausible that they would still be filming.
Yeah, they're on GoPro, yeah. So they're not being encumbered by them.
Yes.
It's not like, I think it was like Ryan in the last movie who is carrying around like a 30-pound like
yes.
shoulder, like boulder of a camera.
Yeah.
And he's like, I have to protect my daughter, but first let me pick up this 30-pound camera yes. and awkwardly maneuver it to just the right angle.
Right. So we're not doing that in this movie. So it's much more plausible to be running around with cameras. We all have a camera in our pocket on our smartphones all the time. Where it doesn't as easily pass is the third question of, could this movie have been, you know, pieced together? I don't think it's plausible that, like, all this footage would be found unless it's a movie about making a documentary, so I accept that. Because the other thing is, like, in a found footage movie, for the most part, everybody needs to die or disappear. Maybe there's one survivor who brings the footage. But like, usually it's found footage because we didn't find the people. And there's survivors at the end of this movie. So I was like, what is this? What is this? But I've accepted your explanation.
We both saw Frogman.
Love Frogman.
At Telluride Horror.
Love
Frogman. Frogman is amazing.
Yeah.
I want nothing more than a MILF Man I Love Frogman t-shirt.
Yes.
I want that shirt so fucking bad.
I want the frog around and find out.
Oh my God, it's so great.
That's a very good one.
And Frogman is another movie that has survivors.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. I am okay with like the fact that persons like survive mm-hmm. in it. I, you know, in terms of like who is editing and cutting this together, I'm thinking like Chris and Margot are cutting this film together after they escape. And they're like, let's take it to Slam Dance.
Yeah.
Like after they do this harrowing ordeal and they recover for a little bit and they go through some pretty extensive therapy and, you know, do some work on themselves at that point. They're like, you know, we got all this footage. It would be a shame.
And it does make sense because mm-hmm. they're filmmakers.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they do. So if they have all this raw footage, they're going to make a film.
This is their Apocalypse Now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is their Heart of Darkness right here. This is like them going through it. So why wouldn't you mm-hmm. do a film based on this right now? Yeah. So this is the out of all of the ones that we've out of the recent ones we've watched between Marked Ones and Ghost Dimension and Paranormal Activity 4. This is the one where it feels like most likely that most of what you've seen, you would actually capture in film.
Yeah, That's true.
Because you're right. For a lot of it, it's not scary. It's creepy. And it's more of a mystery.
Yeah.
And it's less bad shit happening throughout the movie.
And I really actually like that because it feels more, I don't want to say realistic because, you know, it's a movie, but like this story makes sense the way it unfolds. She's spending mm-hmm. time at this family farm. She's picking up little pieces along what the way they're hiding things from her. So like the way the story unfolds does make sense. And I like that.
Yeah. I think I can get your anger at not, well, what is it about it not confining to the rules of found footage that kind of like has you feeling angry? Like, what is it about it?
Well, now that I'm like accepting this as a movie about making a movie, I'm way chilled out. But like when I'm watching a movie where like I feel like it can be a cop out. So if you're following the found footage like rules of like these shots have to be plausible, we have to have gotten these shots with these cameras, and then you bail on that, it's like the easy way out. You know, I'm like, you did everything else in this movie to make it the way you needed to. But then you gave up when there was a hard shot later. Like, I'm not a filmmaker, so I probably shouldn't talk shit. But like, mm-hmm. I'm like, do you, I respect found footage as a type of like an art form. And so if you don't want to do it, don't do it. But if you want to do it, please, please try to commit to it. So that just bugs me.
I think this might be a case, though, where the filmmaker, like William Eubanks, and there's not a lot of interviews with him talking about this movie. Like the one thing I found was him talking about a movie he did this year. And they ask him about, like, will you ever do another Paranormal Activity? He's like, oh, they don't want me back.
Oh,
like that was like the one thing.
Oh,
it's like,
no.
Oh, I did one. They don't want me to return.
Dang.
You know, you come on for this and you're told like, this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like, this is something you do or don't want to do.
Yep.
So here's what kind of, and I can also like last night, we did a double feature, a little family double feature night, ordered a little Chinese food, sat on the couch, kind of a nice night. And we did Late Night with the Devil as our second of two movies. Kick things off with Ghostwatch.
Nice.
Ghostwatch might be the most effective found footage movie of all
time. It's incredible.
It is so good. And my wife has seen it before, and I've seen it before. My daughter hasn't seen it. So we queued it up, and all we told her, and she's, you know, going to be 14 in another month. She's pretty hip. She's pretty savvy to things. And all we told her was like, these are actual, this was broadcast in the UK only one time in Halloween night, like 30 years ago. And these are actual like news presenters in the UK. Like this was an actual news program. Mm-hmm. And that's all we told her about it. And as we're watching it, like towards the 2/3 point, as it starts to ramp up, she's like, wait a minute, was this scripted or was this real?
I love
we're
that.
Like, no, this was an, and we just wouldn't really answer. We would kind of dodge it because we just didn't want to spoil
it. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm looking over at her and she would like every few minutes kind of like, no, really, like, and all was this like an actual broadcast? And I'm like, yes, like they actual broadcast on this on TV. Like these are the real people.
Yep.
Like these are the Michael Parkinsons, like an actual BBC presenter. And these were like actual journalists, like the Sarah and this other journalist, like they were married. And she's like, but is it, you know, this really happened? I'm like, just watch it.
Right.
Like, this is like the only, you know, because we didn't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
And I would just watch her get more distressed. So it did what a good found footage movie does,
mm-hmm.
is that it makes you suspend disbelief completely. And at the end, we told her, like, when it was over, we're like, okay, it was scripted. You know,
yeah.
It was like a one-time thing. And she was like, and you just saw her whole body go, whew, like a huge,
yeah.
We weren't going to do that. We weren't going to like send her to bed later that night being completely fucking freaked out. but it like really, and I think that added to the experience, you know, like when I first saw Blair Witch Project,
same.
I knew it was a movie, but I had that small inkling of doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
In this, you have none of that. You don't for a moment think you're looking at, like, you have Chekhov slow motion camera tricks.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
Like, yeah. Like you introduce that like early in the movie, like, look at all these cool things my camera can do. And like, just like Chekhov's gun, like later on the movie, when Dale gets his throat ripped out,
yeah,
it goes to like a cool slow motion
it does.
Thing. And you're like,
which does look cool. Man? But I was like,
it does. What made me realize that this was a movie about found footage filmmakers was the dinner table sequence, because it's all done in one continuous, like the singing is all one continuous take,
yeah,
of the kids singing. Like there's no cuts in that, but there are constant cuts in the filming of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's only one camera.
Yep.
So at that point, it made me think, okay, I'm not supposed to think this is found footage, because I'm getting like 2 to 4 to 5 different cuts and different angles and different shots. And then there's the thing at the end of the movie with Margot and her mother. Mm-hmm. And at one point, the camera angles just start to inexplicably change,
mm-hmm.
where all of a sudden we go from like Margaret's point of view to her mother's point of view. Then we change Margaret's mother's point of view to over her shoulder. Mm-hmm. It becomes like way different. I'm like, I'm not supposed to think I'm in a found footage movie anymore. I'm just like in a regular old movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I didn't think of that. And that is a good point. The one thing that made me kind of go like, you've taken it too far. Is there's a moment when a shotgun goes off, mm-hmm. and the sound design does like a ringing in the ears sound. And I'm like, this is a camera. Like, if this is found footage, the camera's ears aren't ringing from the shotgun blast. But now
that's
I'm
a really
like,
good point.
Okay, the filmmakers put it in after because they're making a movie. Like, I, Mike, that has really changed my whole perspective on this movie, and I like that. But at the time when I was watching it, I was like, did you just make the camera's ears ring? Because I want to turn the TV off at that.
And I think that's maybe, and I could be completely wrong, and I could be like,
no, I accept
that
it.
That could be a thing where like Landon and Eubank are like, no, this is a found footage movie. But that part of it is because this gets dumped straight to streaming.
Yeah.
You're probably not doing like, there's not nearly as much like press on this movie pre-release mm-hmm. that there is for any of the others, where you can find like a ton of interviews that they're doing with outlets and they're talking about the movie. This is just like, here is some content dumped on the meat gristle for a service, and like it's out there and done with, and we're moving on to bigger and better things at this point.
Yeah,
there's not as much where I would love to hear them talk about it.
Yes.
Like, let's talk about why we filmed it this particular way. But there's none of that. There's no physical release of this movie. Actually, there is now, I believe. There is now. So I'm wrong about that. But there's like, I don't think there's a commentary for this movie where I would love to hear them talk about whether or not they, you know, chose to break that format. But I think with this series, because we're conditioned, why wouldn't we be after 6 movies to think of like, well, it's the found footage series.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Like even Blair Witch Project, like in the second movie, they break the structure. Like the second movie's not a found footage movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's good.
It's, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's the, if Paranormal Activity went the Lake Mungo route.
Mm-hmm.
If they said at some point,
that. Yeah,
right, and that's what I feel like this is closer to. That
it is. You're right.
So okay. The other thing too is like Chris has his own footage of the events, mm-hmm. and then at the end of the movie, you have the police footage.
Yes.
So why would you have these competing narratives? Like Chris wouldn't have access to this police footage. Which to me is like, that's why it's meant to be like one cohesive movie, not a found footage movie.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So,
I should rewatch this movie with that framing and see if I have more fun with it.
And that's why I really like it. Yeah. I think this one is just like, let's do something different. Where as opposed to like part four and Ghost Dimension, which is like, let's just try to play the hits with lesser success. And they just feel like, this doesn't feel tired to me.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true. We're not just recycling old Paranormal Activity greatest hits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And part of that, too, this one looks so much different from all of the other movies.
Yes.
If I didn't know any better, I would have thought this was like a ladder, like a you know, with the Hellraiser movies. By the time you get to like part five, part six, it's a pretty well-known fact that what would happen is like Dimension would get these scripts that had nothing to do with Hellraiser. And they said, what if we made your movie but put Pinhead in it and Doug Bradley shows up for like 10 minutes and we call it like Hellraiser Bloodlines?
Yeah.
And we're like, I don't really want to do that. Well, then we won't make your movie.
And you're like,
Hellraiser 6 it is.
Right. I love Hellraiser now. Yeah.
And it's the only one that's like shot in 4K. So it looks pretty nice.
It does.
As well.
Like yeah.
The color looks really good. Yeah, so it looks different. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what you would, the kind of movie I would expect to see at something like Telluride Horror.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not something I would expect to see like in 1,000 theaters, but like, do you ever go to a film festival and you're like, this is a movie that's meant to play at a festival and on my television screen, but it's not meant to play in like a ton of theaters?
Yeah.
Like some movie, yeah, it's that kind
of coffee movie. Table.
Yeah. I love that movie.
It's great.
The feel bad movie of the year. That's a movie where if Paramount gave them that list, they're like, fuck your list.
Yeah.
You wipe your ass with your list.
Good.
So, all right, Ari, where do you want to go with this? I've just kind of gone on for a rant.
No, it's good. We kind of touched on this, but we both like the characters. Like the core three of Margot, Chris, and Dale. Yeah. They're likable.
What do you like about them?
They seem real. They seem relatable. They seem like they're friends. Like when Margot goes and gets sort of trapped upstairs, it just felt really real to me. Like sometimes in horror movies, if a character makes a decision like that, we're like, why did you do that? But like her going up there to investigate the sound and then accidentally getting trapped and then hiding, like that all just felt really real to me. And it made me feel like scared for her. And Dale is just trying to, he's just like happy to be here. He's trying to make the best out of, he's making friends with strangers. He's, you know, we find out later they're not actually Amish, but they're sort of presenting themselves as Amish. And so he's kind of like, I'm being open-minded about what that means. Like, let me try your haircut. Let me try your clothes. And he's genuinely trying to, like, be a part of the community that, you know, because they just kind of show up. And it could be really rude, but they're trying to be really polite and not invasive. So I like that.
It feels like, yeah, it feels like a few movies ago, Dale would have been written more as like a Mika or a Daniel.
Yes, exactly.
Where he would
hitting
have been kind
on
of
the
a clown.
Teenage girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would have been a dick. And like Dale is just like genuinely a harmless doofus in this movie where he says a bunch of things which sound really strange and goofy, but he has no idea that they are strange and goofy and everybody is kind of looking at him askew. I think at one point, like Margot even looks at Chris and does the like, this guy's crazy hand motion.
Yes.
There's the Fruit Loops moment where he's like, do you realize these guys have Fruit Loops? Like it genuinely blew his mind that they had like their own breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
And then I wrote down here, like when Margot gives her little speech at the dinner table about feeling like humble and happy to be there, he starts clapping.
Yeah.
And he's like, I thought this was a clap moment.
Yep. Yep.
And just like, I put a note like, is his mom a Sasquatch? Because he says he shares a room with his mom and he's like 6 feet seven himself and like tall. Super hairy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like you said, he ingratiates himself to that community as best he can. He like tries on their clothes. Mm-hmm. He's the comic relief. Poor gentle Dale.
Yeah.
He's the one that gets gotten earlier than others. Way. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about Margot and Chris? What do you like about them as, and I don't think they're a couple, but as like a partnership.
Yeah.
It's a partnership in college.
Yes. Chris, I don't feel like we get to know as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the documentary is about Margot and her family. Mm-hmm. And so Chris doesn't put himself in there as much, which makes sense. But he seems really supportive of Margot and he's really encouraging her to do this. And so he seems like a good partner in this way. And Margot, I kind of expected her to be like a lesser movie might have her be like either judging the Amish community like, oh, their ways are so weird, or like being really condescending about them. Mm-hmm. But she's just sort of like neutral and interested. Like she makes one, it's not even a misstep really, but when she says to one of her cousins like, oh, I really like your dress. Did you make it? And she says, no, I got it at Walmart. Like that's the only time Margot kind of goes like, you know, I'm trying to connect with you about your Amishness. And then she doesn't do anything like that again. So that felt to me like how a character truly interested in meeting her family might act.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then like the girl's like next response is like, do you have TikTok on your phone?
Yeah.
And Margot looks genuinely taken aback by that. She's like, how do you know what TikTok is? And I don't think that's a clue that we're not supposed to think these people are Amish. I think that's just like a genuinely like funny moment. What are they supposed to, if they're not Amish, are they Amish adjacent or total normies that are faking it? Like, that's what I don't get.
I'm not sure either, because that would be a lot of pretense to put up just to get Margot back. But maybe it's like some of their customs look to outsiders like Amish, so it's an easy thing to say to keep people away while they practice whatever demon rituals that they do. So maybe they just sort of like have enough overlap with Amish practices that that's an easy out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't think that like, let's say at the end of this movie, let's say they're successful and they get Margot and they trap like Asmodeus in Margot's body and chain her up. I don't think they're like, okay, now we go behind the church or our town. It's like not like a thing like The Visit where they have like their own like normie, like suburban homes after that. And then like Jacob, like the leader, like it's like, oh, okay, I gotta go back to my job in IT.
Right.
You know? I just think that like they have all the same customs as the Amish, but the Amish are like, don't fucking pin your demon. Like, do you think that at some point they ever like went to like the Amish outskirts and neighbors and are like, can we borrow a cup of sugar and maybe some shackles because we have like a demon woman in the pits below us and we need to keep her chained up? But they're like, you have what? Get out of here.
Don't lump us in with you. We're not doing all that.
We're not weirdos.
Right, right. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. And what part of the country are they in?
I think they say it's Buffalo, New York.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
So it's either upstate New York or Western Pennsylvania.
I was thinking Western Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Something like that. So
yeah.
Be right, it's like it was Miami. It's really weird.
Just the outskirts
weird part
of
Miami.
Miami.
Just the just off the beach. I like Chris and Margaret. There's not a lot to Chris. What you really get from him is that he's very meticulous and very like fastidious.
Yeah.
you can see that, like, Dale makes him a little bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, when Dale is, like, going through his things, he's like, oh, I love these GoPros. Like, you can go underwater with them. And Chris is like, yeah, you can do that with them. And he's like, please give me my stuff back.
Right.
Like, please don't break my shit. Margot's personality tends to be, like, she's very accommodating to others. Mm-hmm. She's very curious and persistent. But I feel like this is the first entry where we don't really get to know the characters that well.
Yeah.
I don't really know a lot. Even, like, Margaret is your main character. What I know about her is that, like, as a baby, she was left at a hospital. Yep. She was adopted, and now she wants to know her family. But I don't really get a great sense of her outside of this, mm-hmm. where even in the other movies, like, I get a greater sense of the other's characters. And I think because of that, and maybe because there's a lot of handheld camera use, there are points of this movie where it feels like a first person video game.
Yeah.
It feels like they're more character avatars than, like, human characters.
That's a really good point. Yeah, that's true. I think in the other movies, they have much smaller casts. And mm-hmm. in Next of Kin, there's so many people to get to know that we're not really getting to know our main characters. And we're more focused on unraveling the mystery than, you know, getting to know who's there. So, yeah, mm-hmm. first-person video game, yes, that makes a lot of sense.
What do you think about the unfolding mystery of this movie?
So maybe I've only watched this movie once.
Okay.
And so maybe if I watched it again, it would hold a little bit more for me. But I feel like I didn't quite follow the logic of why they needed Margot and, like, what they were doing with that. It felt a little bit like not as outlandish as the ghost dimension, where I'm like, why is any of this necessary?
Mm-hmm.
But is there a solid, do they explain it more and I just didn't hold on to it?
I think so. So my understanding of it is basically, it's similar. Basically what happens is, like, as Asmodeus is, his spirit is trapped in a woman's body, and it's through this one bloodline. So Sarah, like the mother, is containing his essence, essentially.
Okay.
And that's why she's kept in that hole.
But they need
and
her daughter.
The body can only withhold him for so long. Like, it basically, the human body is going to give out after so long. And that's why, like, the shit is starting to go down. Like, they have, like, when they see, like, the two-headed goat is born,
yeah.
they're okay, things are starting to ramp up. We need to do this soon. Like, things are starting to go wrong, so we need to, and that's why there was this sense of urgency in finding Margot.
Okay.
Or is it Margaret or Margot? It's Mark. I substitute those.
Yeah, I thought it was Margot, but I could be thinking of Hell House.
Yeah, could be. That's why they need to get her there so quickly.
Yeah, okay.
Because they need to, like, do the ritual to transfer Asmodeus's spirit or essence or soul or whatever you want to call it from Sarah into, like, her offspring, Margot. And that's why Sarah gave away her daughter.
Okay.
Like, because she didn't want her to have the same fate as she did.
But then what are they going to do when Margot's body fails, because she doesn't have a daughter?
I don't
know. Okay.
That they might have to find.
They'll have to figure it out.
I don't know if they find a way to mate. They might have to, you know, maybe there's, like, a scientist-y Amish person.
Maybe.
That can do, you know, have you seen Immaculate yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
No, I'm super behind on everything.
We won't get into that? Okay. There, maybe they do some science-y shit. I don't know. That is a good question.
Yeah.
So, but it might have been like we weren't able to even get that far ahead because, like, stuff is going so wrong right now.
Right. They're like, fix the immediate problem.
Yeah.
Then we'll deal with that.
Yeah. They might have had to start a new bloodline.
Yeah.
Who knows? Hmm. Yeah. Or they might have just had to, like, say, yeah, we might just have to, like, start over with a new bloodline mm-hmm. at this point. That might be the way it is. So, I This is the first entry in like four or five movies that we're not ahead of the characters.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like really since part two that we're not ahead of everybody. So I don't feel myself getting impatient with this one. And it's kind of nice, even if the mystery itself, like you kind of see it. You kind of know where it's going. Like, look, you're not, it's a Paranormal Activity movie.
Right.
You're not going to get invited to like an Amish community and then just have them give you some nice pie and send you on your way.
Right, right.
And then have everything be hunky-dory. It's kind of nice to have a mystery to solve and have it unfurl again. And you're trying to fill in the pieces and guess what's going on. And by the end of this movie, like everything is answered. Like this is a nice stand, like the first one, standalone, one and done. I don't have a lot of missing pieces. I get it. I don't have to like go, well, wait a minute. What about X, Y, and Z and this right here? And how does this fit in? And why is there time travel?
Yeah,
and
yes.
Why is Toby, like, if Toby is in 1992, then why do the things in 2006 happen?
Yeah.
Why is Hunter back in time? I don't have to do all that. It's really straightforward. I'm not waiting for Katie and the Golden Girls coven.
I wasn't sure if they were going to. And
yeah,
like, that was kind of nice, too, because when I went into this, I didn't know if it did tie back in at all. And so to have it not do that and just be its own thing, that is refreshing.
Now, what are your thoughts on the Baylors as like a community? Mm-hmm. Do you feel that they're evil or do you feel that they're tasked with this unimaginably awful responsibility that requires this terrible sacrifice?
Yeah.
Or are they just like a little bit of both?
It's such, I mean, this is a movie that makes us ask that question about the circumstances that you're saddled with. How much responsibility do you have to try to change them versus survive within them? Like, they are sacrificing a person every so many years to this demon. Is that, it's a trolley problem. It's the demon trolley problem where they're like, do we save the rest of our community or sacrifice one person? And, you know, I don't think the point of the trolley problem is that there's not an easy answer and that all the different circumstances you add make it, you know, a different situation. So it's hard for me to say, like, what we're presented with definitely makes them look evil because that's the framing of the movie. But what if we saw it from their perspective where they were like counting the ticking clock down to this demon breaking out and there we see their survival story? Would we then not think they're evil? So that's a really long way to say, I don't know. And it's complicated, but it's a good movie to make us ask that question.
Yeah. And we see at the end what happens to them when they're not able to contain the demon. The whole community gets destroyed within a matter of minutes.
Yep.
So you're kind of like, maybe they had a little bit of a point there. I think what makes it difficult is all of the subterfuge and the coercion and the manipulation. Like there's no agency.
Absolutely.
That's there. Like Margaret never has a chance to have a say for herself. Her mother never had a chance to say anything for herself.
Yep.
And that's where it becomes like a real difficult thing. But like as a group, like as just like a shadowy group, like pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like really creepy.
I love a two-headed
great
goat.
Atmosphere. Oh my God, that was really good.
Yeah.
That was great.
Apparently killing a two-headed goat wasn't on that list.
No. So, what if it was number 11?
They were like, you can do the first 10.
Just made.
Or you can't do the first 10, but you can do 11.
Just made the cutoff. Yeah. I made a note, like, Asmodeus does feel a few levels up on the demon chain than Toby.
Yeah.
Way more powerful.
The name is way more metal.
Oh, super.
So the name Toby never really sounded too demonic.
I think of, like, Toby from The Office.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just the HR demon.
Kind of a
demon.
Sad sack. Yeah.
Yes. This demon seems more powerful. And also more threatening. Like, Toby wants particular, you know, kids. which is messed up, but like that's his thing. Ozymandias is like, I'm going to eat this whole community if you don't give me what I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And he's like getting, you know, given hard looks, and cops are like shooting himself in the head. He's out mm-hmm. there driving, listening to some country music out there, looking a little ripped. Like that dude's looking a bit like Adam Driver, like really jacked up and kind of going around, but definitely like they're way more terrified of this demon. Like that's a pretty deep hole to keep a person
yes.
down. Like he's even without all, even with her kept at bay, like you said, like two-headed goats are being born, all this crazy shit's going down. So, and it only takes like one movie for him to come to power.
Yeah,
we don't have
true.
Like six movies of him getting kind of foiled by the end of it. Like, let's face it, it takes a long time for Toby's plan to come to fruition.
Yeah.
And it's not really much of a plan. It's just like, I just want a human body.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dream bigger, Toby.
Yeah, you could do more. I don't think they should have gone back for the van. If you're feeling...
Yeah. That also was, I was like, I'm not sure about this decision.
Yeah. Just call a tow truck.
Yeah. Like, they go to get the battery. They could just keep going.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, they have all their equipment to consider. I guess it depends on how scared you are. Like, how unsafe you think you are.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel by that point, they're feeling pretty nervous.
Yeah, they're acting urgently. You think
yeah,
you would just
like,
stay.
Something is wrong here.
Yeah.
You're seeing, like, heavy metal album covers carved into churches.
Yeah.
Two-headed goats everywhere. I think I'm done.
Yeah, maybe,
at that
maybe
point. I'm like,
write off that equipment as a loss.
It would be the perfect situation for someone to say, I've watched a lot of horror movies.
Yes.
I know how this goes.
Oh yeah. In 2021, they could have said that. That would have worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the only other thing I have here is like really the last 20 minutes of this movie.
Yes.
Because I really like the fact that this one really goes for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get way more than these movies. And Ghost Dimension tried to do this, but I thought it was like really sloppily done. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about like the shoddy CGI and the ending I felt like was really generic. This one felt a lot like Rec, but instead of Rec in an apartment building, mm-hmm. it was like Rec in an Amish community. And it just made me want like 90 minutes of Rec in an Amish community.
You know what? That would be sweet. I would watch that.
That would be very cool.
I thought this movie, so most of the Paranormal Activity movies end with a dropped camera. And there are several times in like the last 10 or 15 minutes of this movie where a camera drops.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's the end. Oh, nope, it's not. We're keeping going. Oh, now it's the end. Nope, it's not. We keep it going.
The return of the king.
They keep faking you out. And then, you know, it ends with Sally Hardesty's style. You know,
yes.
There's two survivors. They're driving away. She's screaming. The camera's on her. And so I was like, that movie, it definitely subverted my expectations of how it was going to end. Big time.
Did you stop it there?
Does more happen?
Yeah. Oh, you didn't get the end.
Wait, didn't I?
No.
Okay.
So it fades to black, right? And then after that, police cars pull up.
I did see that. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I just, in my head, like, yeah. I had flipped those things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is where I think they throw the
found footage
conventions yeah. like out the window.
Yep,
because you have that confrontation between Margot and her mother, mm-hmm. and where she like shoves that hook right in her neck. And you have like Chekhov's hay bale drop,
yes.
which you know comes up early in the movie.
Yes. We had
and
to.
You're like, I wonder if this will come up again.
Yes.
And it certainly does. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty cool creature design. Like, it looks pretty fucked up.
It does. And the creature also reminded me of Rec.
Absolutely. That's where I got that. from. But then not only do you have that, then it's like, oh, we forgot our keys.
Yeah.
We have to go back and get them from the body of our dead friend. And
yeah. That's never good.
You never a good thing. And then when you run back, it's like Children of the Corn gone haywire.
It is.
Which is awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
I wanted more of that. I wanted like 5 more minutes of like them like shoving pitchforks through other and their eyes are bleeding out. And, you know, like, I just wanted, like, Malachi, like, setting people on fire. Because that shit was awesome. You're like, oh, they weren't fooling. Like, shit really does go down if Asmodeus gets out. And then, like you said, like, Margot has her, like, Sally Hardesty ending at the end of this movie. I kept expecting the thing to jump over the seats, like it maybe got into the back of the van. Because they kept showing the back of the van, and you can't really see over those seats. And I'm like, well, there's your found footage ending. They're going to drive off, and then it's going to leap over the seats. And you didn't get that, which I kind of liked. Mm-hmm. I liked that there are survivors. And then you have your ACAB moment at the end where, and that was creepy as fuck when the dude is hunched over and you hear the baby crying and it stops being a baby sound and just becomes this kind of like guttural kind of mopping roar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's creepy as shit, man. And he's getting people to Jedi mind, just doing some Jedi mind tricks to get them to blow their brains out. Like, I'd watch more of that.
You know, I think I really need to rewatch this movie and just try to have more fun with it. I don't know what my problem was. Like, because as we're talking about this movie, I'm like, yeah, that is fun.
I think if you go into it expecting a straightforward found footage movie and it's not that, and it's so much different from the others, then it's going to be less enjoyable. If it was just Next of Kin or...
Yeah.
Or if it was like The Amish with a question mark at the end of it,
right.
Or the Amish Assassin.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe if it was just that, it'd be like 3.5 stars.
Yeah.
But I think when you put Paranormal Activity in front of it, there's an expectation that is there.
Yes.
Like, because, you know, you get like the date cards.
Yes.
You have a little bit of that, but you don't have the typical Paranormal Activity trappings, which I'm okay with. Like, I'm okay with doing this series without any of that.
Yeah.
It's not doing a Friday the 13th movie without Jason to me.
Right. Right. No.
So, or a Saw movie without Jigsaw.
That can be successful.
Yeah, Spiral was great. I really like Spiral. I'm the Spiral defender
in
this bunch.
I know.
What if Saw 11 is a Spiral sequel?
You know, that could be interesting if we're following, oh gosh, what was his name?
Chris Rock?
No, the other guy, his foil. The guy.
I can't remember his name. I don't remember names.
But the guy at the end who's like, it was all his plan. If we follow him some more, I can get on board.
Okay. But no more Chris Rock.
I just don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
What if it's Chris Rock at the end of it? It's Will Smith is the bad guy at the end of Spiral 2, and he just slaps the shit out of Chris Rock.
I think that'd be the end of the Saw franchise. I think that's where we put it to them.
That's when you would tap out, and like the tape that gets played is like, you put my wife's name in your mouth,
right.
And then you just get slapped. All right, that joke's not dated whatsoever.
No, it's very
so
relevant.
On that note, I think we're done. I think we're all set.
We did it. We did Paranormal Activity.
We did it. Ari, you've got a book coming
out. Yeah, I do.
Tell us about
it. Yeah. So you can pre-order Millennial Nasties, Analyzing a Decade of Brutal Horror Film Violence from Encyclopocalypse Publications. It comes out September 17th. And if you want to tell a friend, or if you want to share the pre-order link on your socials, if you think that it looks neat, you can do that. You can put it on your to-read on Goodreads. Did you know that that helps authors? That does help authors. So... yeah, you can find me on all the socials at Ari_Hellraiser, and I will be linking to it there.
Excellent. Yeah. Cannot wait. I've read it. Well, I've read one of the earlier drafts of it. I'm not sure if it was the final draft. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
People should get it. People should put their hands on it. Do it or else. Yeah, you heard me, or else. I said it. Listeners, please make sure that you are rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us everywhere that you get your podcasts. That goes a super long way to letting new listeners find us. Also, just kind of feels good to get a 5-star review.
Yes.
And a few kind words. It lets us know that we're on the right track and doing the right thing. Yeah, I mean, it's nice to hear positive feedback and encouragement. So keep saying this every week. Do it. I don't know what else to say. Just fucking write some nice things about me. Okay? Mom, what are you doing? I know you're listening, Ma. I want one compliment before you die. That's all I want.
It's not too much.
I told my mom the other day, my mom never relaxes. Mm-hmm. She threw a retirement party for my cousin a couple weekends ago, last Saturday. And she just doesn't relax ever. I'm so tired. And she runs around cleaning everything. Uh-huh. And I'm like, well, just sit down. She's like, no. So when my mom dies, eventually, I'm going to have her made into an animatronic for her wake. So it can go around the funeral
and
parlor,
cleaning
everything.
Take people's cups up.
Yeah, because that's my mom. That will be.
Man, that is relatable. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez. I feel like that's the best way to remember her.
Yeah.
She died as she lived, cleaning shit. So, that got morbid. Anyway, love you, Mom. So subscribe to us. Become a patron.
Yeah.
Go to patreon.com/podandthependulum. We have a ton of bonus content up. We recently put up our coverage of Immaculate and the First Omen, where Brian and I compared and contrasted the two latest Nuns Playtation movies. We have a ton of other stuff up there, about 50 plus hours right now, with a lot more coming in the coming months. Mm-hmm. So patreon.com/podandthependulum. As low as $2 a month will get you a ton of bonus content, and it goes a long way to keeping us going. It does pay for the hosting, fees, the recording fees, and all of that stuff for the show. So please consider becoming a patron. Make sure that you're subscribing to us on the socials, Pod and the Pendulum on Instagram, Pod and Penned over on Twitter. And follow our website, podandthependulum.com, which is where all of our back episodes are. We also have links to all of the podcatchers, so you can make sure it's very easy to subscribe to us wherever you get your shows. And we'll be back next week with our ranking episode,
yes,
where we're going to talk about how these 7 movies shake out. I think I'm going to do something interesting. I think when we rank them and we give our numerical rankings, if somebody ranks a movie last, it's going to get negative points.
Ooh.
So I think we should kind of punish a movie for being last.
Okay.
So it should be interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see how that all turns out. And then our next series after that will be, we're getting into a little super heroics here with the half vampire, half man, all badass Blade.
Yes.
And a trilogy of films coming up. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yes. Start your homework. Start watching Blade. Yes.
Don't stop watching Blade. Just watch Blade.
Continue to watch Blade.
Fucking great.
Yes.
Ari, it's always a pleasure.
Yes, always.
Have a killer weekend.